the jam, pump it up while your feet are stumping. And the jam is pumping. Look ahead, the crowd is jumping.
Pump it up the jams here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to our live special coverage from the United Center here in downtown Chicago. I've got the guy who literally pumped it up for the best roll call in any political party's convention in the history of, well, basically the world. Jason Ray, Secretary of the DNC, Wisconsin, native Wisconsin resident, Mr. Extraordinaire. I mean, you're getting all the ups, all the props, all of the snaps for what was a roll call for the ages.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate it. I do want to also just give credit to the production team who made it all come together.
Kidding.
There were more than 70 folks involved in helping pull that off and in the planning process. So major kudos to those who helped make it all possible.
Well, since you just mentioned the production team, I'll take the second right now and say thank you to Brian Kelly, Corey Hartman, Chris Casper, Calvin, Jess, and all the people at Civic that have made this happen for us. We just get up there and talk, Jason.
I just read what was on the teleprompter for me.
Right. It was pretty incredible. What was your favorite moment from the roll call vote?
Oh, that's a really great question.
Especially because you had to do it virtually. Like, we were robbed in 2020. So you presided virtually, like, wah, wah.
I think the coolest part for me was probably when I got the opportunity and the privilege to get to reaffirm Kamala Harris as a nominee in front of the entire convention hall. And just hearing the eruption of applause and cheers. And it's why I'm really glad that even though we had to do the virtual vote early, the virtual roll call to get them on the ballot as our nominees in Ohio, that we still got an opportunity to do the party business in a celebratory way here. I think it was really important for the delegates, for the community at large, for the world to see us uniting together. So I think that moment when everyone was just in unison and just excited, and it reminds me, you know, it's about putting joy back in politics. That was a joyful moment.
Yes, it really was. So thank you for that. It was terrific. I am also so proud of all of the different representatives of the state of Wisconsin that I'm getting to see at this DNC. And obviously, we're an important state, and the road to the White House goes through Wisconsin. But thanks, Jason. You're an incredible representative of the state, of the LGBTQIA+ community. You are the CEO of the LGBTQ Wisconsin State Chamber of Commerce. You know, just a few small duties on your plate on any given day.
I'd like to keep myself as busy as possible. Keeps me out of trouble.
Well, and you've been at this convention business for quite some time, Jason. I was just doing my due diligence before we hopped on air here, and I read, I believe, that you were at your first convention at the age of 17.
I was. I have been attending, have not missed a convention since 2004 in Boston, which has been just an incredible, as a kid who grew up in rural northern Wisconsin, who just had an interest in politics. My parents, you know, they always voted, but were much more focused on the Green Bay Packers than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of the one who was like, well, I'm going to watch the State of the Union. I'm going to watch this inaugural thing. And they're like, okay, go, you do what you want to do.
But, all right, honey.
but to have had the experience that I've had, I've been blessed and privileged beyond belief.
So two questions. How does this convention stack up? And the second one, you can take these in any order, Jason. Interviewee's choice. Why were you so interested in politics? Was it just innate, or was there something particular that stuck out to you as a young person?
I feel like it was something innate that stuck out to me. It was just kind of what happened, and it just felt natural. I remember in elementary school, we had to write a report on somebody famous, and I chose John F. Kennedy. And it just felt natural and continued to study. And for me, I've always viewed politics and the political party as my way to create change in my community. That if I can elect folks who share my values, share my vision, I can have them go do the policy work once I get there. I want to get them to that spot to do that. So I've always just kind of been driven. And it's encouraged me to, you know, to get involved with my county party when I was still in high school, to get involved, to run for the DNC. I got the honor and privilege to serve 6 months in D.C. during high school as a Senate page for Herb Kohl.
So that's a cool job.
That was an awesome experience. So I've been really blessed, but it just kind of felt innate. And it's opened the doors to so many unique possibilities, and including the last six conventions. And I don't know that I can pick a favorite, out of that bunch because each one is so different and unique.
All of your children, you love them equally. They all have their unique attributes.
They do. I mean, that first one, you know, in 04, the first time you ever walk on the convention floor and you see the balloon drop happen and you experience, that was the year Barack Obama gave the keynote speech.
It was the beginning.
And then 08, when we had Mile High Stadium the last night of convention. Each one has been so different, but I would say if I had to choose a favorite, I think it's probably this one right now because this moment, there's just so much energy and joy and pure excitement from folks that is something that I just haven't felt in a while.
Yes, I particularly because we were robbed of a convention in 20. It's just so nice to be together. I keep describing this as rock concert qua church revival, like that qua family reunion. Like it's all those things combined together.
It's incredible how much we can pack into 4 hours a night of programming. And you're right, it's special guests, musical guests. I think tonight we've got the Chicks and Pink, I think.
Yes. It's like, and the fact that they're female acts.
It's
really
incredible.
Cool.
John Legend last night with Stevie Wonder before that. What I like about it, you know, you think back to the roll call as well with just the different music that we played and things during it. It is not just representing one generation, one segment. It is showing the diversity of the party. It's showing the diversity, how people can come in and that everyone, you know, that I've talked to across the country this week's been texting that everyone feels seen. They see themselves represented some way in the convention, which is our goal as we tell this story.
Well, and I'll just tell you, having attended the RNC, that's not the same. I'll set aside my rabidly editorialized comments about the overall like look slash style point slash fashion slash vibe. But you look at the delegates and the attendees at the convention, and it's not a particularly enormously diverse group. And that's when the party's on the national stage. You would think like you might try to muster up some complexity, right? Mm-hmm. Some diversity, but no. That's what I love so much about this. You get to see all of the different generations of leadership within the party. You get to see every community represented. It's really special.
I mean, and you look at it with the speaking program, featuring people like Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez earlier in the week, Mayor Cavalier Johnson this week. We're showing the new tip, but we're also bringing on those like Michelle Obama, like Bill Clinton, like Barack Obama, who have been there and have served. Like, it is really trying to show that we are really the party of the people, for the people.
Yeah, for me, it has kind of been a bit of a retrospective of my own political journey as a Democrat, right? Like, Bill Clinton has spoken, Barack Obama, right? We had JFK's grandson. All of these people with these ties to what I'm going to call, like, the modern progressive Democratic movement, which doesn't mean we always agree with each other perfectly.
No.
But I keep saying to friends of mine, I don't like this, that, or the other thing. I always say two things. The Democratic Party is a big tent party. That means everybody has a place. It also means we're going to disagree, but we do that in our family. We try to ground it in the values that we all share. And we're going to keep arguing, but that's what a big tent party is about. And then the second thing that I like to remind people is the alternative. There's not a good alternative, especially in this moment. So, we'll have those discussions, those nuanced discussions, but that's the way it's supposed to be.
Well, and I think you hit on one thing, though, that I think is really important as folks think about it. You compare the two conventions, and you talked about Clinton speaking, you talked about JFK's grandson, you had Jimmy Carter's grandson as well.
Yes, thank you for reminding me.
You had a representative of every current living Democratic president had some sort of representation in this convention. The RNC did not have past Republican presidents participating and engaging and speaking there.
Zero. Nada. Zippo. Zilch. Not a one. Democrats batting 1,000 on that point. The MAGA party batting zero. And they're all different.
They're all different. They all have
different stripes of Democrats.
Exactly.
Yes.
And we came together and we celebrate all of them because we believe in the same things. We believe in fighting for the people. We believe in our future for freedom. Yeah. And that's what's been on display all week. And it's been just so exciting to see everybody come together in this moment.
I also have had a couple of moments as I have reflected on all of those different leaders being represented across the convention, that we have moved far along as a party as well. That what we hear now is clear, unafraid articulation of healthcare freedoms, mm-hmm. clear, unqualified love, support, and an embracing of the LGBTQIA plus community, right? Like that we have moved, right? That there is this sense of progress.
Oh, very much so.
Right? Like that's freaking huge.
I mean, I remember being on the floor in 2012 when we were in Charlotte for the convention, which was the very first party platform we adopted that supported marriage equality in it. And that was only 12 years ago.
Correct.
And that was only after Joe Biden came out on a national interview and said, I support marriage equality. And then the president, Obama, came out shortly thereafter and made it happen.
That was the order. Yes.
But you look today, in two conventions since then, how much the LGBT community is featured, how much they're included, it is talked about. When we talk about freedom, it is very clear that it's freedom of choice, freedom to love who you love. It is not lost out there anymore.
Yeah, it's, again, it feels such a full circle moment. So let's leave on a little bit of a personal notes. You were a Senate page. I was a congressional intern through the Les Aspin Center for then Congressman Tom Barrett. What is your favorite, little funny thing that people wouldn't know about as a Senate page that you experienced?
I'll share a story because it's really quick. But when we were
have a minute.
I've got 1 minute. Okay. We were on the floor of the Senate, the second week there, working the vote. Some Senator Joe Biden grabs me and says, hey, I've got somebody for you to meet. And I said, sir, I can't leave. He said, no, come with me. And he introduced us to the Dalai Lama.
Shut up.
No. I heard I was a 16-year-old kid, and here's...
My story is downright lame now. Okay.
I'm sorry.
Here's my story. Jason.
Big hitter the llama.
Big hitter the llama. So I got that going for me, which is nice. My story, not nearly as cool. It involves neither Joe Biden nor the Dalai Lama, I'm sad to say. But one of the tricks was when giving Capitol tours, there were a couple of statues and things that we would make up stories about that are passed from intern to Senate page to intern. Folks, don't believe everything your tour guy tells you. Jason Wright,
thanks,
such a pleasure.
No,
great to have you. Secretary of the DNC, my friend, and now each one of yours. We're partying it up. I am Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network special live coverage of the 2024 DNC. We'll be back in just a moment. One of my really good friends here, frankly a personal hero and someone that I think every Wisconsinite owes an incredible debt of gratitude to, Tanya Atkinson of Planned Parenthood Wisconsin. Thank you for making time, Tanya.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited for the conversation.
I know. I think I've only seen you on Zooms
and things. I know, right.
Things.
All the Zooms, all the,
three-dimensional,
yeah.
Tanya. Take it. Super cool.
Yeah, same.
How's your convention going?
It is incredible. And it's really such an honor to be here in this incredibly historic moment. So it's been a wonderful time.
Good. I'm so glad you are wearing white as well today. Such an important moment, right?
Yeah.
In all of suffragette history for feminism, for what real equality should be,
mm-hmm.
which necessitates bodily autonomy.
Yes.
I can't fully participate in a democracy if I can be forced to bear a child. I mean, it's that simple, isn't it?
It is that simple. It is absolutely that simple.
It's been very fascinating to me as an attorney watching these court cases in the state of Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had numerous conversations with people trying to explain that infanticide or the intentional battery of a woman that results in the death of a fetus
mm-hmm.
is actually what our state law prohibits, that's ancient. But that all of this confusion points right back to first principles, which is every time you try to legislate this thing, this idea of a woman's control over her body and our right to access abortion care and other reproductive health care, when you try to legislate that, you end up in this slippery slope, completely untenable place.
Yep. Yep.
For women who are conservative, or families or voters that are more conservative, explain to them, Tanya, why is this so important? Yeah. Why is it so critical for us to separate religious beliefs from what is legal, available, and safe in a secular democracy?
Yeah, that's such an excellent point, excellent question. And I think, first of all, Wisconsinites have made it clear that the vast majority of Wisconsinites understand the need for bodily autonomy, and that it is time that Wisconsin declares that we do have the right to bodily autonomy, bodily agency, our ability to make our own healthcare decisions, and hard stop, right? So that's the vast majority of Wisconsinites out there, and they've made it clear time and time and time again, especially over these last few years. So that's I just want to lift up everybody in Wisconsin, and I don't know if you can tell by the accent, but I born and raised in
Me
Wisconsin.
Too, friend.
Yeah, right, exactly. Born and raised. Oh yeah, in the Driftless.
Oh, yeah.
Shout out to the Driftless. Yeah. So you know, and I think there's so many reasons for this, right? So first of all, people can't participate politically, economically, socially, if they are not able to make those decisions. So that's one piece of it. And there's so many other elements, but the other reality is, you know, medically there is no way, and nor should there be a way to regulate reproduction or sexual health, because every single person has a different experience with their sexual and reproductive health. Every single pregnancy is different, and so to regulate that is, there's an infinite number of situations
every
out there.
Every pregnancy is different.
Every
conception is different.
Yeah.
That's really, we hear these heartbreaking stories now coming out of places like Texas and Alabama and even Ohio, right, of women whose fertility is placed forever in peril or stripped from them involuntarily, whose lives are at risk because doctors can't provide the care that they know that their patients need. It has been so hard for me, Tanya, on a really personal and human level, because I've had friends that have had to make that choice for themselves, and I was proud to stand with them and be with them and support them. I'm having such a hard time processing the idea that in one breath you can advocate and be talking about love of people and love and care for families, and then be so callous and cold towards women whose lives are at stake, whose fertility is at stake, who are trying to make the best decisions for themselves and their family. I can't square those two things. It just seems so diametrically opposed. So how has it been as an advocate? I mean, you go out every day and you talk about this.
Yeah. I think there's sort of, I look at it in I guess, different buckets, right? If you want to say something like that. You know, when I, so before I worked at Planned Parenthood, I was I worked for a child advocacy organization. And before that, I worked with children as a social worker. And I worked in the state legislature for a while. And when I started working at Planned Parenthood, I asked somebody a very similar question, and I said, when I was an advocate, advocating for economic justice, child welfare, I said, where were these individuals that are standing outside the health center now protesting? And somebody pulled me aside who was seasoned and said, do not look for logic.
Yeah.
Do not look for logic there. And there are a lot of people, the vast majority of people, where it's critical to have the conversation.
Yes.
So the folks standing outside protesting a health center are not the ones that we need to understand. It is, how do we have conversations with our friends and our families and our neighbors and have a conversation that's really just rooted in our own values?
Yes.
And we find that when we take a minute and really truly listen. Our values are aligned, and people can move toward the movement based on their own values. Because
yes.
You know, somebody truly may say, you know, I don't think I could, you know, choose abortion for myself. And then if I take a minute and take a breath and say, tell me more,
mm-hmm.
and they say, however, I understand why it needs to be yes. legal and accessible, right? That's how we come together. I'm not trying to convince somebody of anything. I'm simply listening and hearing and saying, okay, yes, you understand and I understand that people need to be able to make this really important decision for themselves, no matter how we get to that,
yes.
to that decision, you know, to get to that end point and understanding.
Fundamentally, the greatest risk to women's health and the health of our families is our failure to listen to women
mm-hmm.
and those that are tasked with raising our families.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just leave everybody with this small anecdote, an example of exactly what Tanya Atkinson of Planned Parenthood Wisconsin is talking about. When I was a young person, my parents, Kennedy Catholics, very pro-life.
Mm-hmm.
And one day somebody had written on my dad's bumper sticker, do you care as much about the kid after they're born?
Mm-hmm.
And my dad said, that's a point. That matters. And they have evolved from that position because they kept their hearts and their minds open.
Mm-hmm.
And they believe that their pro-choice stance is truly rooted in those very same values that they held so dear and still hold so dear
mm-hmm.
that led them to a different conclusion before. We can change our minds. Now is an opportunity.
Yep, absolutely. Thank you for sharing that story.
Thank you so much, Tanya.
Yeah, thank
it's
you
always
so
a
much.
Privilege
yeah,
to talk
same.
To you.
Yeah,
Tanya Atkinson
you.
Of Planned Parenthood Wisconsin, folks. We barely have time to breathe here. I'm Maggie Dawn. It is the Civic Media Radio Network's special live coverage of DNC 2024 coming to you live from downtown Chicago. Don't go anywhere, folks. We got more headed your way up next. Watch me dance. I have been dancing the night away every night here at the DNC because I am a joyful warrior. It has been really, I don't know, a moment of a lifetime for me, Brian. I don't know about you.
This has been amazing. I'm running on fumes, guys. I'm running on hope. Right now,
yes.
I'm literally running on enjoyment and hope.
Hope and joy.
I'm in pain. I've been in pain since the beginning of the. Like I
not
hurt
just
myself.
Not just from missing the chairs.
Yeah,
either,
no,
right?
no. I already pre-injured myself before coming down here. I pulled an oblique, so I'm already
Perfect.
In pain no matter what, and it doesn't matter to me. Like it's one of those like all hands on deck, let's go. Everybody's happy. Everybody's exciting. It's just. People are smiling. People who should normally just turn their heads at. Giant slovenly dudes like myself.
Oh, stop.
You know what I mean? Like compared to everyone else, everyone is in wonderful. I'm in sweaty clothes and a Hulk shirt. It's fantastic. I don't have any problem with it. I think it's great. I'm just saying that it normally at a convention like this, people would be like, hey, I'm so and so and I'm important. I have this thing. I don't feel that air of I'm important here.
Yeah, there's not I don't get like an elitism vibe.
No,
I'll say that.
I joke. I was in front of Billy Porter the other day, but we were laughing back and forth about
yes.
being in front of each other. You
yes.
know, like it was just everyone's treating each other like a regular person, and I think a lot of that is more just. I think we all had a big perspective moment this past couple weeks, and we're now being able to celebrate it, and we see the reflection of our own joy in other people, and it's really infectious.
Yes, 100%. Speaking of infectious, the excitement yesterday, especially when Oprah came out, because people were like, oh, it's Oprah.
Yeah, she has a thing going on. She's a little big.
She is a big freaking deal. We listened to her cat lady joke, which I thought was just fantastic. But I thought we could take a little bit more sound, Jess, if you can run. We're going to save the Kamala for the very end, but I wanted to, let's take a listen. Oprah Winfrey, if you didn't know it, everybody, she is a registered independent, not a Democrat. Let's listen to what Oprah's message was last night for independents.
I'm calling on all you independents and all you undecideds. You know this is true. You know I'm telling you the truth, that values and character matter most of all.
Yeah. It's what I call the common sense. She's just speaking common sense. Values, decency, these things matter. I thought that was a great call out. Let's hear what Oprah had to say. Just a one-liner about decency.
Decency and respect are on the ballot in 2024.
And we all know that, gosh darn it. You know, you don't have to be a political wonk to know by just observing that Donald Trump is an indecent, petty, little man. That's it. You could vote on that alone. It's that simple. I love how Oprah ended up the afternoon speaking because she did it in oh-so the Oprah way. Just let's let her rip with Oprah calling out who our next president of the United States is going to be.
We're all Americans, and together, let's all choose Kamala Harris!
I mean, that's some Oprah right there. I'm joined right now by Wisconsin delegate and attorney Craig Mastantuono. Welcome back, Craig. We ran out of time earlier this week.
Thanks for having me.
Really good to have you back. Let's listen to some of the Tim Walz speech from last night, because I was really impressed and very pleasantly surprised. He really owned the moment. I also love how his son owned the moment. If you don't know what we're talking about, folks, Tim Walz's son basically kind of stole the show for a second, for a couple of seconds. His son, Gus, has some unique needs. And as his dad was talking and his dad was acknowledging that his children are, quote, my entire world, Gus jumped up jubilantly from his chair crying, pointing at his dad, saying, "That's my dad, that's my dad."
Brings tears to my eyes right now.
I know.
It was incredible.
And it was so human, right? This is a guy who knows how families struggle. They struggled to get pregnant, and how challenging it can be to meet your child's individual and unique learning and development needs. I thought that was just a great moment.
I thought it was something, and it was right within the context of what Governor Walz delivered, which was a speech that emphasized his strengths. He stuck to what he does best.
Yes.
He didn't try to do some elegant, eloquent, broad, Obama-like speech. We were talking about that yesterday.
Yes.
He almost did a good coach move, which is, you know, I'm good at the run, and I'm good at,
yeah,
you know,
go
I'm gonna
run.
I'm going to run four
You're
yards
not the
at
passer.
A time.
Yes. Yeah, you know. Everybody's got to know their position on the field to lead into the coach metaphor. Just let's take, I thought this was an incredibly good line. The government keeping out of bedrooms, just let's take that.
Healthcare and housing are human rights. And the government stays the hell out of your bedroom.
I mean, delivered so well. A lot of just common sense. He was very folksy.
Very Midwestern.
Very Midwestern. Let's take, if we can, cut number 40 and 41, Jess.
Sorry, what were those called?
That's all right. This is the students talking about students and leadership, and then the next one talking about Project 2025.
You know, when I was teaching, every year, we'd elect a student body president. And you know what?
Those this teenagers could teach Donald Trump a hell of a lot about what a leader is. They spent a lot of time pretending they know nothing about this. But look, I coached high school football long enough to know, and trust me on this, when somebody takes the time to draw up a playbook, they're going to use it.
Hey, Maggie, what do we tell witnesses in trial law? Be yourself.
Right. Be yourself.
Do not be somebody that you are not. And Governor Waltz followed those instructions perfectly to a T.
Yeah, he really did. And I think that genuineness, it just comes across. You contrast that with this doofus J.D. Vance. Speaking of the doofus J.D. Vance, he's now a TikTok sensation. Jess, will you roll that sound?
I'm a never Trump guy. I'm a never Trump guy. I'm a never Trump guy. I never liked him. I'm a never Trump guy. I'm a never Trump guy. I'm a never Trump guy. Never. 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 I'm a never Trump guy. Never liked him. I never liked him.
I love DMX, but this is pretty good.
How to go from a Yale-educated, best-selling author into ruining your reputation nationally in a couple of short years for blind
you
ambition.
You got to work at it. I've got two words for you. How do you go from a Yale-educated lawyer with like nothing but the world ahead of you to a guy who flip-flops nearly on a daily basis, doesn't know what motivates him, and basically has offended everyone in the country at least twice?
Yeah.
Peter Thiel.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. Yes, right. Well, of course.
Cause, effect.
Always helps to have that type of safety net, right? But this is something I don't think he's going to come back from. It's hard to live that kind of flip-flopping down and just, you know, castrating yourself, essentially, to get to where you want to be.
It's been so tortuous to watch these clips and all of this information coming out about this guy. And the alternative, I mean, it's as if the vice presidential contrast is almost now as absurd as the top of the ticket
Absolutely.
Contrast.
Absolutely. But, you know, I got to say, going back to the top of the ticket, when I joined you, you were talking about Oprah's remarks about decency being on the ballot.
Yes.
And I thought it was a great segue into what I wanted to talk about as a member of the Hispanic caucus of the
Please.
Delegation, which is my 92-year-old mother who emigrated from Mexico City and is intent on voting for Vice President Harris in the fall. She's still with us, and she's on the south side of Chicago, and she's as politically astute as ever. But you know the first thing in 2015 when Trump came down the escalator that got her? It wasn't, for surprisingly enough, the murderers and rapists remark about her people. Okay, that was bad enough. But just knowing what she knew about Donald Trump is the indecency of the man. It exudes off of him. My mother is a classy woman. My father opened the door for her. My father made sure that she was always taken care of. Mm-hmm. And she ruled the house with an iron fist of a Latina mother, right? And she just knows a creep when she sees one, you know? And she knew. And I was amazed that, you know, before we ever got to the issues, which we've discussed at length in the years since then, my mother and I and the rest of my sisters and brother, it just, you know, it was a no-brainer for her. Are you like kind of a, are you kidding? Who would go to a place with this guy, let alone vote him into the presidency?
Yeah, that's to me, you know, I think in addition to Joe Biden undertaking an incredibly selfless act that ultimately was in the best interest of the country, what he also did, whether intentionally or specifically thinking this or not, is he took the excuse to vote for Trump off the table.
Yes.
Right? Because I had heard from a lot of my conservative friends, listen, I mostly like Trump's tax policies and all this stuff, and I get into those arguments with them as well. And I know he's a real creep and not a good man and he's terrible, but, you know, Joe Biden's not got it anymore. Mm-hmm. This was the fig leaf.
Yes.
This was the excuse. It's now been taken off the table completely.
Done.
And it's like, oh, you care about law and order and public.
Done.
Yes, use
Done.
A district attorney and attorney general. There are no excuses.
No, and kind of in a similar way that Biden took that off the table coming out of the Hillary versus Trump.
Yes.
Is Biden took that off the table a little bit from people that were saying, I could not vote for Hillary. Right or wrong, she was demonized for 20 years by the time she got to the presidential race, right? And so I spoke with a sitting judge, a retired judge in 2016, right before the election. And I'm not going to out him, but he was a
respected... You'll tell me off air, Craig.
I will absolutely tell you off air. And it's a month before the election, and he was one of those, you know, Republicans that was kind of, you know, financially conservative, but, you know, liked to think he was a little socially liberal.
A little,
which meant,
dash.
You know, abortion exceptions for rape and incest, right?
Yes.
And I said to him, well, what are you going to do? You know, he said, on the one side, you've got her, and on the other side, you've got a pig meeting Trump. I said, so what are you going to do, Judge? He said, well, you're going to hold your nose and vote for the pig. And I thought, oh, my God, are you kidding me? So there were those people then, too, that used Hillary as the excuse for why they couldn't vote, you know, for Trump's opponent.
And the sequel ain't going to be any better.
No.
That is Craig Mastituono, my good friend. Now, all of yours. What are you looking forward to tonight, Craig, most of all?
You know, I'm not one of those people that's obsessing over whether or not Beyonce is going to appear tonight.
Good for you. As if Pink wasn't enough. Right. Are you kidding
me? We're getting a little spoiled here. You know, Stevie Wonder last night, one of my heroes,
Legend,
performing one of
Patti
my favorite
LaBelle,
songs.
Common,
John. Sheila E. on the Latina side.
Sheila E.
Fantastic. No, I really want to see what the vice president...
Wait, Sheila, he was here? I'm going to leave right now. I'll be right back.
Brian's taking off.
I just want to see what the vice president brings. You know, they've been whining and complaining about she has no policy, and I think she's going to lay out her vision for what she wants the next 10 years and the next 15 years in America to look like. And I think that we should pay attention to that, because it's the biggest speech of her life, right? But it's also a big speech for America. Obama was right the other night when he said the whole world is watching to see if we can pull this off, and I think that's what she's going to show you tonight.
Craig, on point as always. You're going to tell me who that judge was once we get off air, folks.
You bet.
My last segment of the DNC coming up, and we're going to end it all, folks, as we begun with my good friend Morris Pearl, the millionaire who thinks millionaires should pay more taxes. Don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to Civic Media Radio Network's special live coverage of the 2024 DNC. John, it is my last segment, for my show at least, of the DNC. I can't believe I finally got here. I just need to lay my head down, Morris. I'm tired. It's been a week of joyful warrioring, of elevating people's voices, of trying to get to, I think, trying to get the message through to the middle class and just ordinary Americans that this presidential ticket of Harris Walls is your ticket, right? It is the ticket. These are people that care about the middle class, that aren't going to give away handouts to billionaires and the wealthiest corporations. And so it's only fitting for me to be joined for this last segment of my show during the DNC with one of my favorite guests and where I began my DNC coverage, Morris Pearl, former BlackRock executive and chairman of the Patriotic Millionaires, a group that believes that wealth should be taxed just like work is. Welcome back, Morris.
Had a great time here in Chicago.
Yes, it has been a great time. So what is your favorite thing so far at the DNC?
It's got to have been listening to former president and Mrs. Obama speaking.
Yeah.
They just energized people.
Yeah, it was really incredible. I thought that was definitely one of my top three moments. Morris, there's going to be a lot of blood spilt between now and the election. And a lot of the consternation, a lot of the hand-wringing that's going to come from the right, a lot of the bogus, the lies, the distraction, is going to be about economic policy. If there are people listening to us right now, Morris, that may be inclined to believe some of that hogwash, you're a rich guy, you don't have to work anymore, you're basically what everybody wants to be.
Okay, right? I mean, that's fair, right? You got all you need and more.
Yeah.
You don't have to work anymore. If people are inclined to believe what the MAGA cult is selling, why are they wrong, Morris?
Well, I think what the MAGA cult is trying to sell is the idea that you have more to fear from your neighbors, from people who live next to you and are also struggling to get by, but maybe have a different color skin or talk with a different accent or, you know, have names that end in the letter O. And those are the people that are in the same situation you are. And on the other hand, what the Democrats are telling you is that the people who are stealing your lunch are the people like me who haven't worked in years, get plenty of money from investments in the stock market and whatever, and don't even pay any taxes on it.
Mm.
And really, are you more concerned about the possibility of other struggling people who are maybe trying to catch up with you? Or you may be concerned about the guy whose money is trickling up to from everybody when they pay their bills.
Yeah.
And I think that's really the question that's facing America right now.
Yeah. Well put, Morris. And that's, for as long as I've had political sentience, I've always said to people, listen, we have common cause in one another if you are a person who gets a paycheck. Women have common cause with black and brown communities because we want to get paid the same dollar for the same amount of work, right? That middle class families, that urban middle class families have much more in common with rural farming families who still have their family farm, and we all are struggling. And part of the reason for the struggle is that the tax system is so fundamentally unfair in this country that we have for some unknown reason, and a reason that doesn't match fundamental American values, decided that earnings on investments, though still dollars, are somehow not supposed to be taxed as much as dollars earned from work. It's fundamentally flawed, is it not?
That's the basic philosophy of the other side. That, oh, the rich people, they're supposed to get richer. You know, celebrities are supposed to get special treatment, and rich people, they're supposed to have special privileges. And if you believe that's the way the world is supposed to be, well, maybe you should vote for Donald Trump. I'm going to go and listen to, you know, Vice President Harris lay out her case. If you watch on TV, I'll be sitting right behind the Puerto Rico sign in section 202.
Oh, I'll look for you, Morris. Wave.
I'll try.
Wonderful.
But, yeah, I mean, I think that's the case that has to be made, is that you don't need to be afraid of other people who are with you and struggling to get by and of them catching up with you somehow or other.
Right.
That's not the fear.
Yeah.
The fact is that there are some billionaires and millionaires who really think everything should be owned by millionaires and billionaires.
Yes.
And you shouldn't have anything.
Including the entire apparatuses of government.
And that's just
wrong.
That's not the way America was supposed to be.
Yes.
You know, originally when we created the states and colonies, wealthy people paid more taxes. People paid taxes based on their wealth.
Yes.
Their wealth was essentially how much land they owned. And that was how all taxes worked.
Yes.
And the idea
yes,
that
income
we,
tax and taxes on capital gains, all that stuff came much, much later because
yes.
they understood you tax the wealth.
Yes. That's how our country was founded. That's what the founding fathers understood. But somehow we've got to the idea that, oh, taxes only come from paychecks, from people who get a paycheck every week should have tax deducted from it.
Yes.
And people are already rich. Well,
Maybe. Maybe not. Folks, that is my good friend and yours, Morris Pearl. He's going to be part of my new daily segment called Maggie and the Millionaires. There'll be a special day on Monday because those are going to be Morris Mondays. Happy DNC, Morris. Thanks so much for stopping by. To end where I began is just such a perfect circle coming to a close. I'll be looking for you behind the Puerto Rican sign, the Puerto Rican delegation, during our next president's speech this afternoon. Thanks again, Morris.
Thank you, Maggie.
Folks, it has been a week. I can't
when we began the convention and our coverage here at Civic Media, I didn't really know what to expect. I knew that people were really excited, that there was a lot of joy, that people were engaging, that the Harris-Waltz ticket was encouraging folks to get involved that had never been involved before. Yesterday, I heard a story walking through the concourse. I heard someone saying to me, hey, I was walking into the convention and this group of young people came up to me and they asked me, how do I get involved? How do I volunteer? Who do I talk to help? In my opinion, this convention has exceeded all of my expectations and it is bringing so much excitement and love to everybody that's touching the movement. I am a joyful warrior. I'm Maggie Dawn.